Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Dr. Sindhu Adderson will be the most important person that we speak to at the beginning of the year because she'll tell us how healthy we are. She is the medical director and immediate care physician. And for virtual visits at Northwestern Medicine, it is a pleasure to meet you and to talk to you, Dr. Adderson.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me. Happy New Year.
Well, the same to you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And is it for our health a Happy New Year? We'll find out. So I think I'll start with the flu. Reports are that we're seeing more of the flu at the end, the tail end of 2025, and expect even more going into this year now. Is that the case? If that is the case, why is that the case? And what can we do so we don't get the flu in the first place?
We have seen the test positivity for influenza increase from 9% to around 17% in 1 week. So, you know, as we're gathering for the holidays, people are, you know, socializing a bit more. We're all indoors. We have seen a bit of an uptick in the flu virus just kind of spreading in the community. And, you know, this is something that is typically expected, particularly at this time of year around the holidays and the cold weather. So it's not something we're not really, it's not something we're not prepared for, but it's something we do come to expect every year around this time.
Is that because we're not vaccinating as often, or the vaccine has got it wrong? They've guessed on varieties of the flu bug, if you will, that aren't necessarily as common as some others.
Yeah, I mean, I think we may see a little slight, you know, decrease in the amount of folks getting vaccinated for the flu. We tend to tell people to get vaccinated for the flu, you know, before Halloween. So I generally say flu before boo is an easy way for me to remember. But what we're seeing is, you know, generally the vaccine is the number one way to protect yourself and other people from severe disease. And it's never really too late to get vaccinated. Other things that we tend to see is like, you know, we want to make sure we practice good respiratory hygiene, covering your cough, washing your hands, things like that. When you are ill, you want to stay at home, try to avoid going out if you can. But, you know, as the holidays come, people tend to not want to miss things and may be ignoring their body, as you know. We want to socialize and get out there when we can. But we do tend to see the spread. But the vaccine is an effective way to keep the flu at bay and at least prevent the severe progression of influenza.
Well, you would think, but some have said that this year, like some other years, also there are two issues, that people are not getting vaccinated as often as they could or should, but also that the vaccine itself is not targeted for the right strain necessarily.
Yeah, I believe they try to do their very best in terms of predicting the strain that could be spreading in the community each year, but, you know, we don't always get it right. I haven't read so much about, we're not so deep into flu season where we don't know the true effects of that yet. But, I mean, we always tell folks to get vaccinated. Getting vaccinated for the flu, you know, has these lasting effects, just preventing this severe infection, which, you know, years and years down the line can prevent even things like, we're seeing studies that show it prevents, like, your dementia risk and things like that.
What prevents dementia risk? Can you say that again?
Oh, flu vaccine. Just getting your flu vaccine, getting any vaccines in general, because you want to prevent any severe infections. And that's just something important to, you know, just do and just take good care of yourself.
Well, of course, but I want to jump into that. I've not heard a connection between prevention of Alzheimer's disease and getting a vaccine. That, in fact, because there are some who say the anti-vaxxers, so to speak, that it causes Alzheimer's disease. And it seems, if I'm understanding, you're saying just the opposite.
Yeah, they say studies show that flu vaccine is linked to a lower risk of developing dementia. And some research suggests it's up to 17 to 29% reduction of risk. And those who have dementia are a more vulnerable population and a much higher risk of death from infection, which makes that flu shots being just vital to prevent severe illness or hospitalizations.
All right. I want to talk about something so many of us have forgotten about or get angry when they hear about, and that is COVID. So people say, I'm tired of those COVID vaccines. And now it seems the virus is less virulent. So do we still need, for all of us, a COVID vaccine, or is that for a targeted population?
Generally, the recommendations now are for those over the age of 65 or anyone who's immunocompromised or, you know, at risk of developing severe COVID, people who are diabetic, have high blood pressure, any cardiovascular conditions, if you have chemo or on any immunosuppressants, those are the folks that we really want to focus on getting those vaccines. Because if you were to get COVID and your body can't fight it off, the concern is you are at risk of getting a severe infection. So it is really targeted at those populations at this point in time.
I don't want to say any drug names per se, but I've been talking to physicians about this, and I want to know your take on this, that the prescriptions that have been available, because COVID itself has changed, the virus has changed, it's gone through several mutations since those prescription drugs that are available. I'm not talking about remdesivir, and that is a drug given very differently in hospital. I'm talking about drugs that can be prescribed, they're pill form, that they don't do as much good. And it really depends on, because the virus has changed. And also, it depends on the individual at this point, that the potential side effects are real. And if it doesn't bring benefit for real, it's really a case by case. But certainly, if you have COVID, don't automatically assume you should get that drug or those drugs. What do you think?
Yeah, I think for folks who are at risk of a severe progression of COVID, like those, that vulnerable population, those who are immunocompromised, those who have these other chronic conditions, Paxlovid pretty much is the oral medication you take for COVID. It's really best when taken in the first 5 days of the onset of symptoms. We do tend to see folks who get these symptoms tend to feel better once they start taking these oral medications. However, any oral medications, particularly Paxlovid, can interfere with a lot of other medications you may or may not be on. So we always recommend talking with your doctor to get a really clear idea as if it's a good option for you.
So the GLP-1 drugs, they're everywhere. You cannot turn on your television without hearing one of those catchy commercials for these weight loss drugs. That's what I'm talking about. And yes, if people lose weight, and you can comment on this, obviously. In fact, they were originally created, I think, for then controlling other medical conditions associated with humans being overweight or obese. But it turns out, you were talking earlier, and I had no idea, that flu vaccines may benefit down the road to prevent dementia in people. Well, they're finding, I think, similar findings for these GLP-1 drugs, I think. So you explain it to me.
Yeah, I mean, GLP-1s, you know, they do offer a lot of benefits outside of blood sugar control. They are initially created in an effort to control for type 2 diabetics to control their blood sugar. And then, you know, through research and like studies, they found that people get a significant amount of weight loss. So that's, you know, they have multiple uses at this point now. And then with more and more studies that we are doing, we're seeing that they do improve heart health as well as protect people's kidneys, eliminate fatty liver disease. They also improve for sleep apnea, joint pain, and inflammation. So there's been a lot of emerging research that's pointing to neurological benefits for addiction and mood as well. So we're seeing quite a bit of use cases for these medications and a lot of people benefiting from them. So it's really kind of exciting work, and I'm sure 2026 is going to bring us a lot more use cases for these meds.
So one question that we received in advance, if I get the stomach flu or any sort of bug over the course of the winter, does one then pause the injections of these GLP-1 drugs?
I would continue. I would probably discuss that with your doctor. It's really like a nuanced question, really depending on your other medications, if there's any other causes of these GI bugs. You know, there are a lot of things that could cause GI bugs or the appearance of a GI bug. So that would be a more nuanced question that would require, like, you know, a doctor really delving into your case and seeing all your other medications, if any, and what your symptoms really kind of present as.
And I think the point would be to prevent dehydration. Do most people in this country, do you think, walk around on a daily basis somewhat dehydrated?
I do believe in people's busy day-to-day. They may not be drinking enough water. We do encourage folks to drink as much water as possible. But if you have some sort of GI distress or, you know, diarrhea or anything like that, then you want to supplement with, like, electrolytes. Pedialyte is excellent. Gatorade as well.
Pedialyte even for adults?
Yeah, even for adults.
Yeah.
I recommend those for those who have, like, viral gastroenteritis or GI bugs. But yeah, I think water, people probably are not drinking enough water per day. They say adequate fluid intake is about 3.7 liters a day for men and 2.7 liters a day for women. So I don't believe, like, you know, with our busy days, people are not likely not getting that much.
Excuse me, I need to take a sip of water now as we talk. All right, so I want to talk about snow. It's going to come, more and more of it. And, you know, every year for decades, we've heard warnings about shoveling. Don't do this, don't do that. But every year, I suspect when we have snow every day, you see people in the hospital emergency room who were previously healthy, not necessarily previous heart patients, but they're there, or maybe it's their back that gave out. Do you have any advice for us who still like to shovel?
Yeah, I always encourage folks to kind of warm up first and make sure you're using proper form, you know, bending with your knees, lifting with your legs, pushing the snow. And you also want to take frequent breaks and listen to your body and just try to stretch and hydrate. You want to avoid any heart strain or back injury. Main thing is, if you have heart issues, if you have known heart issues, you want to really consider alternatives to this activity. And we would want you to, like, shovel light, fresh snow, push instead of lifting. Avoid twisting to really protect your back as well. And wear good shoes with good traction, warm layers, gloves, a hat. You know, if you have heart disease or generally inactive, you want to ensure that this is a safe activity for you to do, so probably check with your doctor first.
I'm curious why, we only have about a minute left here, but I'm curious as to why the heart is the organ that gets so much strain when we shovel. And sometimes even people in great condition, young people, find themselves visiting you in the emergency room as a result of shoveling that you'd never expect to have a problem. Why is that?
Likely it's, you know, luckily, I guess in the last couple of years in Chicago, you're not seeing as much snow as we probably did as when I was a kid. So when people go out there shoveling snow, their body is doing an activity they probably haven't done in a while. So, and that exertion is something they may not be used to, or that type of activity they may not be, maybe something they're not used to. So it's just something to really consider. Just thinking twice about, particularly if you're an inactive person. And I think it's just your bodies are just not used to this activity.
So what you're saying is that your local gym should create artificial snow so we can all practice shoveling. Is that what I hear? Dr. Anderson,
I love that.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I'd love everyone to just to get their aerobic exercise and as well as do their strength training each week. And I think we can prevent any sort of injuries from occurring.
Well, for people who do what I do, I think it's mouth moving that wears off the calories, but I don't think it's very effective. Dr. Sindhu Adderson, Northwestern Medicine, thank you so much. And yes, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year. Thank you for having me.